Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Julian Schrenzel. I am president and CEO of Dynexus Group, a mid-market ERP recruiting and staffing agency.
Julian, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we talk about your current role, the current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
It's pretty wandering. I began by studying music, opera. I was a singer, a classical trained singer, and went to New York to act and sing and do TV and anywhere I could make money doing things in front of people or cameras. And I did that for a while. And then I met my wife on stage down in Georgia doing Guys and Dolls the musical. And then we moved back up to New York a little bit and then finally moved back to Seattle, where I started working with my father. He had this company, which was at the time called Schrenzel Technical Staffing. And I began to kind of learn the ropes. And next thing you know, years turned into years. And here I am.
Wow, what a career, what a diverse background. We might use something like that in the headline, the title of your episode, how to successfully transition from the opera singing to being a successful staffing executive. That's super exciting. So what, before we talk about all of the staffing industry insights and trends, how has that experience, studying music, being an opera singer, is there any lessons learned or anything that you took away from that experience that maybe is helping you in your current role?
A ton. In fact, my most recent hire of a candidate who is now going to be joining my company next week, I made it a very strong plus that they come from a theater or performance arts or visual arts background, not business, not anything other than strictly the arts. And to me, that's extremely important. You know, what we do as Dynexus Recruiting is quite different than what most any other recruiting or staffing agency is doing out here. And I have found in my experience in running this company, we are bushwhacking. We are creating things that don't exist. And when you are creating from nothing, having a different perspective on business, on life, being able to approach a problem or a challenge from an alternative perspective, to me, is an absolute game changer. And so I'll take an artist over almost anything in that way, or a creative type.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense when you think of it from that perspective. And I think, just having that completely different mindset or that creative approach to, solving problems for yourself, for your clients, for your partners and things like that, I think that's paramount. So that's super cool. That's very different. I love that. So Dynexus Group, tell us a little bit about what makes you guys so different. What's really the mission of the organization?
Sure. So we work, our niche is mid-market ERP consulting is really what our niche is.
Define mid-market, please.
Yeah. So you know how you got QuickBooks, which is a really small accounting software that you use as a small company or an individual. And then you got the Boeing and the Amazon type systems like Oracle or SAP. Those are the huge ones that you know about. There are a suite of products that are ERP products, which, by the way, ERP is Enterprise Resource Planning. And those kind of provide a format on which your company can run its data and financial life. And those systems that are not absolutely huge and sprawling or tiny are mid-market ERP systems. And some of the ones that you might have heard about might be NetSuite, Acumatica, Microsoft Dynamics, which is now D365, Sage. These are areas these are companies or products that produce for companies that are not mom and pop shops and not multinational, multi-currency, huge organization.
Got it. Thanks for clarifying that. So when it comes to approach and the overall delivery and the competitive advantage, share with us, what is your philosophy on just being different? What's your philosophy on that? Yeah. How do you guys go about establishing that competitive advantage over others that are in the space?
Right. So it comes from the roots of this company. And my father is the founder of this company. He is now retired, but he kind of set the structure, the foundation of the company. And from when he began in 1997, he went from being a CIO with a larger firms to running his own recruiting agency. And he did it because he wanted to find a way to bring quality and integrity into the work of recruiting. Oftentimes when you're working with clients, the recruiter is almost seen as a necessary evil. You know, they've got it. If they're successful, you pay them. So it's like, if they do what you want them to do, you pay them. But if they don't, you don't have to pay them. So it's kind of a conflicting desire. You know, do you want to pay them? You'd rather not pay a lot of money, but you want them to be successful. So it's kind of the necessary evil. And recruiting, in my experience, especially contingent recruiting, is all about quantity at the expense of quality. Which means that if you have like a typical recruiting agency that's running a contingent search firm, they might take on 50 clients, 50 recs, 50 jobs to fill. And they will go over and they will try to have their recruiters shoot resumes out as quickly as they can to as many of those as they can in order that they can make placements easily. Because in the recruiting model, when it's contingent, you know, you're not being paid for the ones you don't fill. You can't put in a lot of time and effort into it, because the minute you take an extra day to really focus on finding the right person and vetting even deeper, five other recruiters who are also contingent are going to put in someone before you, and then you're not going to get paid on the search. So the model requires that you go very fast at the expense of everything. And so what recruiting tends to start being is you try to hit as many trees as you can and grab the lowest hanging fruit from a ton of trees. That's the way you make a lot of money in contingent recruiting. But it also becomes like a boiler room mentality. It's not fun to work, at least for me. I don't find it to be enjoyable to be just spinning the hamster wheel as fast as you can and not really doing any meaningful work. So when my father started what was Schrenzel Technical Staffing, which eventually became Dynexus Recruiting and Staffing, this company, he founded it on the basis that we create a relationship with every client that we have. That every client we have, every search that we take on, we burn the friggin' boats behind us. Meaning, we give an unconditional commitment to be successful in filling every single role that we take on. This is the model we've had for over 20 years. And when my father started it, nobody did it except executive search firms who were filling C-level roles. They somehow got kind of cornered the market on, you know, you give us exclusive and there's an upfront retainer and all that. Everybody said to him, that's never going to work. You don't do that in regular IT or in ERP and consulting roles. It's just not done. But then he did it anyway. And it's been very successful for all these years up until now. And it has formed the basis of the methodology, the identity. It's become the identity of this company that, unlike other companies, we commit to a successful result on every friggin' thing we take on. So we don't take on 50 recs. Like, there's no way we're gonna take 50 recs. We'll take enough to where I have my staff that can successfully do the work necessary. And as a result, for instance, every submission we ever make of a candidate to a client, every single one of them, we expect that the company is going to want to interview that person. And the things they're going to be focusing on is this the right culture fit? Is this person going to benefit our company in the overall? Not, do they actually have C#? Do they actually have 5 years of development experience? All of those things should not be something that a hiring manager has to spend their time on. That's why they hire a recruiter. So that really defines the value that we kind of self-identify as. This is what value we bring to the table. And as a result, it's meaningful work. It's the stuff that I and my team get up in the morning and say, I'm going to do good work and I'm going to make companies' lives better and human people's lives better who are looking for great jobs.
I love it. Those are some great examples, and thank you for sharing those. You've mentioned contingent workers or contingent workforce concept in general, which I've been hearing a lot lately, especially through the pandemic. And these days, that concept has been gaining a lot of ground with companies seeking a little bit more flexibility, agility, and just to be able to move and scale up or down faster. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the overall trend of contingent workforce, more specifically around how can really companies structure their organizations utilizing, you know, contingent workers?
So when you say contingent workers, you're referring, I believe you want to, you're working like gig economy. You're talking about contract workers. Is that correct?
Contractors, consultants, hourly paid employees, those, yeah. I guess, not necessarily that fitting into the, that's kind of that full-time employee.
Yeah, yeah. I understand you.
The reason I ask is because I've been in that category myself as an IT consultant for many years.
Yeah.
And I've also been a full-time employee for other organizations. So it's there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. It's just whatever fits you, fits the organization.
You're curious, right.
To get your take on that as a professional in this field.
Yeah. My take comes from both sides of the table as a recruiter filling roles for other companies and as a hirer myself. Building this team that is at Dynaxis. I think the most important thing is as people focus on scaling their companies, like companies in, especially in 2020, when COVID became a thing, there are companies who absolutely exploded during that time. Look at Amazon, for instance. There are a number of companies that did very, very well through the pandemic. Then there are other companies who in Q1 2021, started doing incredible as the pandemic started to change and decrease and things started to open up and they had gained their position into the future. They had taken time to reflect, companies growing like crazy in the new year. You know, I work in cloud-based technologies and cloud-based in general is one of those things that really picked up because when you're running a company on a software that resides in a data center at your office with a bunch of servers, and all of a sudden all your people can't be at work, they got to be distributed from home and remoting in, you need a system that is agile and be able to handle the new workforce in this new way, new locations, new methods, new processes of doing work. So this industry particularly boomed in that way. But what I find is when I would caution any business owner who is focused on scaling and growing their business to not forget that human beings are human beings and work is what human beings do for their living, to feed their people. What I mean by saying that is it is easy to try to categorize your full-time employed people with your company and a contractor who's doing work for you on a contract, 1099 or W-2 contract basis. And I think that the more you can keep the human aspect in mind as you work with the people who do work for your business, the better off you're going to be. Because I have contractors, but I also have full-time permanent people. And my contractors are every bit as important, and they have just as strong of a relationship with this company and with myself as my full-timers. My contractors happen to have been here for quite a long time. I've been working with contractors for a while. But I don't treat them like a contractor. They are my team and they do key and important stuff. And how they work is a little bit different depending on if they're a contractor or if they're working for a full-time perm. But when you consider them as human beings and you work with them as your team, and you make them important and you put them in key responsibilities and you give them a future that is bright and that is in line with what they're looking for, then they're going to experience ownership in your practice like an employee does. A contractor will. And when you have human beings who feel that what they're doing with you is important work and they care about the company and care about you because they know they're taken care of, people will do great things for your practice, regardless of what you title them as how they're working for you. That's my biggest takeaway, I think.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love that. I love that take. And with you, selecting a very niche area and specializing in that and being the thought leader in that, as you call the mid-market ERP specialty, so to say, What are some of the most challenging skill or like the most difficult skill sets that are very scarce in that particular area, the hardest to find, especially in the current market? I don't know if that really pertains to ERP or mid-market or whatever the case may be. What are you seeing these days and what do you attribute that to?
Sure. So it's nothing new here. This is probably the same as many, many other industries. In fact, I know it is. Mid-market ERP industry has always suffered from a lack of supply and more demand than there is supply, from demand outstripping supply. There are always more companies needing specialized people to implement ERP systems and to develop on ERP systems and to integrate other technologies into ERP systems than there are people who can do it or who have experience and expertise in doing it. So in fact, my foray, Dynexus's foray into Acumatica ERP, when we started working with Acumatica in 2018, the biggest reason why Acumatica was interested in a relationship with Dynexus is they were seeking new sources of talent, because they had, you know, they had 200-250 partners who were selling Acumatica in North America at the time that we met them. And the only way you could find a experienced Acumatica ERP professional was by taking them from another company who had already trained them and they were working for them. So the only way you could do it is by poaching from your friendly competitor. And so what turned out to really what defined the relationship from 2018 to now with Acumatica and us is we have been charged to create new streams of qualified talent that can come into this particular ERP and be able to rise the tide that lifts the boats that makes successful Acumatica ERP partners. That's been our primary concern in the Acumatica space. But as I said, supply is not as much as demand in ERP, and particularly in Acumatica. I can give you an example. Acumatica now has about over 300 partners in North America, and they're growing more quickly than they ever were before. But of all those 300 partners, they have over 10,000 customers that are currently companies that are currently running their products. There are a handful of Acumatica developers, like C#.NET Acumatica ERP experience developers available on the market. There are really, truly, probably less than 50 in North America. You know, especially ones that are available for doing work for us recruiters out there looking to find talent. They are a non-entity. They do not exist. And it's always amazing to see how such a void can occur. Like if I were a developer, that's the first place I'd go, because I'd have work forever and a day because everybody needs me. But you can't find one to save your life these days. So there's a good example.
Mm-hmm. No, great example. And thanks for sharing that. Very specific, very concise. When it comes to just overall industry trends, ideas, things that really excite you these days, whether that in your practice area or not, share with us, what are you researching? What are you looking to invest in? What do you think is the next big thing?
All right. So the next big thing is, at the risk of blowing our own horn, it is something we're doing, which actually defines this practice more than anything else, especially since 2020. So we began in connection and partnership in relation with Acumatica themselves. Dynexus has the ability to enroll people in certification on the Acumatica product. Now, what's interesting about that is if you're out there in the world and you're not in Acumatica already, currently you cannot come and certify on the product. You can learn about the product. You can go to Acumatica Open University and learn all you want about it by watching videos, but you can't take tests and you cannot earn certification, or in this case, it's called badges. You can't badge on Acumatica. So yet these partners are starved for people. And they will, you know, they end up having to hire people who don't have any experience or knowledge of Acumatica. And then they sit them down when they're on their dime, when they're paying their salaries, they sit them down and start to train them on Acumatica once they're already hired. But what we have given the ability, the exclusive ability by Acumatica to seek out great talent from outside of the Acumatica space and enroll them in what we call Certification to Hire. It's our program on our website. It's called Certification to Hire. And we enroll great mid-market ERP talent and young people coming out of college, coming out of the military to transition into the civilian life. Great people who have a good basic background to come in and study and self-badge. So it's a self-study and self-badge. And we promote them and encourage them and coach them through that process. And once they have their badges, we put them up on our Certification to Hire tool. And then we go out to the hirers and invite them to come and look at the roster of people who are badging on the product that they need to bring on people. And that way, if they're interested in interviewing one of them, they can look at a profile, they go in, they fill out the form, say, yeah, I'm interested in talking to this person and this person and this person. And then we work to set them up with interviews. And they get interviews, they like them, they give a job offer, they get the acceptance, we work them right through to a successful placement. And I think this is really cool because it completely takes the element of having to engage in a recruitment search. Like when a company needs something, the recruiting company has to go out and find that person. Well, we've got them and we've got them available for someone to browse. It's like they're walking down the aisle of a grocery store, or actually more like they're browsing Amazon. They can choose what they like from this, from looking at all these filters, and they can filter down to what they need. And then they can ask to interview, and then we take them right through to hire. And in 2020, the certification program became our number one revenue generator, surpassing our other business practices in Dynexus for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. So to me, and nobody does this, this doesn't exist outside of what we're doing in the context of a recruiting and staffing agency. So, and I think it's amazing because it really makes it easier for the client, it makes it easier for all around, and it's a very win-win-win for all three parties involved, so.
Well, I can see that all around. I think that's pretty genius in a way to really expand your portfolio of services you're offering, thus creating more opportunities for your candidates. And at the same time, your clients, your portfolio organization is really benefiting from that particular skill set that you already bring to the table through, you know, such services as a certification and things like that. So that's super exciting. You've mentioned interviewing as part of your overview in the past, you know, for the previous topic we touched upon. As you work with two sides of the equation, you work with the hiring managers and you work with the candidates. So you see both sides and you prep both sides for the interviews, where you work with one side and you work with, you know, setting the expectations on both ends. Share with us your thoughts on some of the most effective strategies that really help you improve your batting average, so to say, when it comes to effective preparation for the interview before and after, and actually during as well.
Totally. I think some of the most powerful things that we've done most recently, especially in light of COVID, I talk about COVID a lot, but all interviews, they're all remote now, right? And for an example, I can give you one piece of advice that has helped so many candidates that I can't even care to tell you. And it's so easy. The fix is so incredibly easy that it's just unbelievable. But a lot of people who wouldn't know about how to use a webcam, right? They will come to an interview right here, and they're in where they're coming on the bottom of their screen, and they interview from down here. And when they do this, it makes them look really weak and feeble, right? It kind of looks like I'm just kind of weak and a little feeble. But if I'm up here, it makes me feel like I'm here, I'm present, I'm with you, and I have a power and a stance and a grounding right here. So just the simple act of adjusting your webcam to make sure that your head is touching the top and your body is in the picture is a huge advantage. And in fact, Certification to Hire, the program we were just talking about, we are adding in soft skills. So I know a company who serves in the same area, that same channel of Acumatica Partners that I do, but he teaches soft skills. And he has a certification program that we are integrating into Certification to Hire, to where we're going to be, in addition to studying Acumatica and getting badged, they're also going to be enrolling in soft skills through that company and getting badged on soft skills. So these kind of basic things that are about how to effectively communicate on a camera will be things that will be part of it. But in terms of interview, yeah, this kind of basic advice about how to be effective on a camera is one of the biggest things that that people can take away that's so easy in terms of interviewing.
Right. No, those are great recommendations. And it's a lot of times, you know, seems very simple, but overlooked when, especially when it comes to interviewing, you know, through Zoom, through video, everything is done remotely. A lot of things, you know, can get complicated. With the current market conditions, so of course, there's that war for talent overall in general. It's just so much supply and less demand. And it's, you know, vice versa. It's almost seems like a candidate market as well to a certain extent. And to take that a little bit further, I talk to a lot of executives almost on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the conversation is, John, you talk to a lot of executives at other companies. Is everyone getting poached left and right just like we are? So what are you seeing there in the market that other companies are doing in terms of being able to not only attract but retain the top talent? Because sure. It's an interesting dynamic with companies now trying to go back to, you know, coming out of pandemic, structuring their organizations in the hybrid model, so bringing the workforce back. So mm-hmm. that creates certain level of anxiety in employees as well, yeah. which may be opening up additional other doors for them with the companies that are not doing the same. So curious right. to get your take on that.
Yeah, you know, I talk to a lot of candidates. Most candidates already have a job before, you know, when we recruit, the best candidates tend to be the ones you recruit from an active job. Because if you're taking people that are not actively employed, then it's more likely that they're not employed because they're not very desirable as an employee, right? So, and it's not just us, it's everybody. When you passive candidates tend to be in generally better than active candidates in that way. So you're always poaching from a company to give to another company to find the best talent. So the question then becomes, you know, how do I keep the people that are really my best people? How do I keep those people? And I can tell you from our experience in talking with passive candidates, very high quality people who are entertaining an opportunity with a different company than where they're currently at. In my experience, the trend, the through line that is true about a decision to look elsewhere comes from a disconnect in their how they feel the company, their relationship to the company. They feel not very connected to the company, not very connected perhaps to leadership, not very connected to the momentum of the company, not connected to the results the company are looking for. They feel somehow disenfranchised, which allows them to look at other opportunities. Contrastly, you can hardly ever recruit a passive candidate away from a company when they say, look, this company has treated me great. I love the people I work with. My work is great, you know, but I'll look at another opportunity. That doesn't happen. People stay where they feel like they have been given opportunity, where they have been shown favor, where they feel cared about. They're not going to diss a company that cares about them genuinely, when they feel genuinely cared about. And if I wanted to just put, there's so many aspects of what makes a person feel like they're cared about by a company. There's a lot of aspects from company culture to company leadership and their style and leadership to compensation. I will just focus for the purpose of this conversation on benefits and compensation. There are two things I've been thinking about a lot these days, and I decided in my most recent hires to kind of buck the norm to go a different route. And that is number one, compensation, setting up a compensation. And number two, vacation. So I just recently a couple of years ago, we were 1 week of vacation in the first year. And then we would go up from there after a certain amount of years. when I worked for Costco Wholesale, there's no vacation in that first year. And I love Costco Wholesale. They're an amazing company that I have a ton of respect for. But the vacation policy there was one that I had a hard time with, because zero vacation that first year was hard to take. So I give 3 weeks to my first to employees that come on board, brand new, even if they've never had, totally junior, 3 weeks of vacation to start. And the reason is that while it's usual that people give less vacation, especially in America, not so much in Europe and other countries, but in America, we tend to give a lot less vacation in the beginning. And I get why. You don't want someone to come on and make a bad hire and then they take a whole ton of vacation and then they leave and then they got paid for it. But if that's a problem that you're having, then your problem is not giving too much vacation. Your problem is properly vetting and choosing the right people for your practice, right? You've overlooked a larger boulder if that's something you need to put in as a factor for how you determine how much vacation you're going to give. So assuming you've got great people, then the question becomes, what do you want that person to do? You want them to achieve the goals and you want them to be a lightning rod in your company, to be great, to be passionate, to go above and beyond, to do all the things that people who are well-rested and have work-life balance, you want them to exhibit those things of those people. What you don't want is you don't want to have an employee that burns out, or an employee that's always tired, employee that is myopic because they've been doing it day in and day out too much. And now they're just stuck in their ways. They don't have the time to breathe and stop for a minute. So when you think about it in that way, it seems ludicrous to imagine having any company have anything less than enough vacation to really allow someone to unwind and have that balance. The other thing was compensation, as I said, pay scales. The whole idea of this is how much this person can make, and then this level makes this much, and this level makes this much. And then you got a new employee who makes this much, but they can't make that much because they haven't been here enough time. That whole model of how we structure compensation is based on not a reality of today. The gig economy makes that different. Pandemic makes that wildly different. Remote work makes that all different, yet people still hang on to the idea of, well, this is how we do compensation. So in my sense, what I do when I'm figuring out compensation is I make a 3-year plan. And I say, this person, if I want them to hit these goals, they're going to deliver this much revenue to the bottom line. And then I say, if they do that, then how much can I afford to pay them to be able to retain this much margin? And I choose the margin that I want my company to earn based off of their success. If they're not successful, they're not going to stick around and I'll let them go. But if they are successful at meeting or exceeding those goals, then I will at least get what I expected and hopefully get a lot more. And if I set them up right, I'm going to create a lightning rod in that person and they are going to overachieve. And then I'll be able to even pay them more because they're going to contribute more to the bottom line. So having a compensation model that's based on an expectation of how much my practice is going to earn in revenue is the way that everybody, I think, should be compensating, should be setting comp.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And a lot of stuff you've mentioned is a lot of times, you know, seems rudimentary, but oftentimes overlooked because it's the little things that count. And if you don't even have that in place, it's very difficult to create that type of environment just in general, kind of that building and fostering that culture that you're trying to promote. So that makes perfect sense. And from all the different spectrums that you were covering. So thank you for sharing that. And Julian, the last segment of each episode, I try to focus on the sources that you utilize on a daily basis for self-actualization and learning. Share with us, what are those? What do you let your mind be exposed to? What's your content diet?
So currently, I'll give you one book that I've been really been listening to on Audible right now. And it's a guy named Mark Sheridan. And it's called They Ask, You Answer. And it is a marketing book, essentially. And the premise around it is allowing your sales, your business development, to come not by promoting and pushing what you do and what you can do, what your products can do, how great you are in your product, but on becoming a place where people come for meaningful answers to their common questions that they have. So we've really been trying to build out in our marketing strategy a way to simply become thought leaders, to be able to be to develop content on our website and our blogs that answer the questions that everybody has when they come to a recruiter looking to hire a certain talent, or they come to a staffing agency needing to solve some problem by hiring someone. So that they ask you answer has been a really neat, it's been a really neat listen, and it's been fun to implement that into our company. So how's that?
Oh, that's awesome. I love that recommendation, and definitely going to add that to my growing list of book recommendations on my Amazon list. But I really appreciate that, you know, recommendation for our listeners. Will make that title and the author available in the show notes. Julian, can't thank you enough for your insights today. Very practical, lots of examples, which, you know, resonate on so many levels. So definitely going to stay in touch with you. We're going to do another episode in about a year, just like I do with all my guests. And we will revisit our conversation from a year ago and see how much I've changed, how much we, you know, how close we were in predicting a lot of things. So definitely looking forward to that.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure being on your podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.